All right, we're starting here on the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, 10 lines down. Lema Kitanai A. Let us say the machloket that we saw yesterday between Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada is actually a machloket Tanaim. To remind ourselves, we saw yesterday that Rabbi Yochanan believes that the Ubar is an independent enough entity to have two halachot. One is that Imshir Mishuyar, that you can leave out it from other Kedushah. If you make the mother Kadosh, you can leave out the Ubar. In addition, you have the capacity to make the Ubar itself Kadosh. You can make it into whatever Kedusha you want, independent of the mother, or irrespective of the mother. That's the view of Rabbi Yochanan. On the other hand, Bar Pada believes that the Ubar is Yerachimo, it's an extension of the mother, and you can't create any independence from the mother, not in the sense that you can leave over the Ubar if the mother is Kedusha, and also that you can't be Magdishit separately. And that's what we dealt with yesterday. We had numerous questions on Bar Pada's position, and the Gemara had answered all of those different Mishnayot Braitot that seemed to undermine that position of Bar Pada. Now the Gemara is proposing that maybe it's a Machloket Tanaim between Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada. Shochet et achatat, person shechs a chatat, umatzaba ben arba chai. You find inside of it a fetus that is 4 months old, chai, that is alive. Now, Rashi will say in a second what the importance of the chai is. Ben arba is important because it's not ben chamesh. We know that by a behema daka, that the term for a behema daka, the Gemara told us in Chulin, in Bechorot, is 5 months. So that means if a behema daka went to full term or carried to full term, that would be 5 months. Once you hit that point of 5 months, there's a machloket Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to what the status of the fetus is. Does the shechita of the mother cover it or does not cover it? But here we're dealing with something that's before the 5 months, which is that it's in 4 months. And if you can see in the Bali Tosafot, they already note something along those lines, which is, Dilu ben hey, it was already 5 months old, bebehema daka, ena niteret le Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, it would not be mutar, because of the fact that it reached full term. According to Rabbi Meir, once the animal reaches full term and it's chai, it's not covered by the mother. That's why we're using 4 months over here, because it's an animal that has not reached full term, and therefore it is covered by the shechita of the mother. Now, chai, again, we'll discuss in 1 minute. Tani chado, we have one braita that says, eina nechalet ele zichrei kuna, that can only be eaten by the male kohanim, veinu nechalet ele pnim min haklaim, and has to be eaten in the azara, veinu nechalet ela liyom, whether you add in the shechita mikubetz, liyom balayla echad, or yom echad, for 1 day, like a chatat. Or in essence, it has the full kedusha of a chatat. V'tanya yidach, and we have an alternate braita that says, nechelet b'chol adam, anyone can eat it. V'nechelim b'chol makom, or nechelet b'chol makom, it can be eaten anywhere. V'ne nechelim b'azara. And that seems to be the opposite of nechelim b'chol makom, means that you don't have to eat it in the azara, but more likely the girsa should run something along the lines of that there are no term limits to that which you're eating, because it's not kadosh, and therefore it would be nechalim le'olam. Along those lines, you would have a girsa like that, that it can be eaten forever, because there's no term limits, it's b'meimat chulin. So you have one braita telling you that this fetus has a din like a chatat, and you have one braita telling you that the fetus has a din like chulin. My love, tenaehi. It must be that this is a machloket tanaim, reflective of this machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada. The Marat Savar, Kedusha Chala al Ubarin. One braita holds that the Kedusha does devolve upon the fetus. Marat Savar, Ein Kedusha Chala al Ubarin. And the other one holds that it's not Chala, it does not take effect on the Ubar. Now, Rashi explains over here that the situation has to be, and this is Rashi now breaks it down for us, there's an assumption here as to what type of Behema we're speaking about, and when the hekdesh took place. And Rashi says, Kasal kadatcho, our assumption here is, the mafrish behema mi'uberet askina. It's a case where he's makdish the animal, where it was already pregnant. Because, the imafrish reikanit, had you been makdish the animal when it was not pregnant, vinit abra, and then it became pregnant afterwards, the kuliyama, ho mikoachimehu, the kadish chulinhu. Since it comes from its mother, everybody agrees that it's chulin. It seems to be the opposite of what you had thought. If it comes from the mother, then it should be chulin. But what it's saying is that we have a position, it happens to be also a machloket, and Rashi notes over here that this is according to that position, that that Valadei Kodoshim only become Kadosh when they come into the world, when they come into existence, once they're born. But not in utero. So now, what Rashi is pointing out is that if the mother was already Kadosh before the entity, before the Ubar was there, then the Ubar is Chulin according to everyone, and that's because the Ubar has to reach full term and be born in order to have a Chavaya, in order for it to be in existence, and therefore become Kadosh because of its mother. The mother's Kedusha can only devolve upon it once it is born. Over here, you cut the term short, because when you shechted the animal, it was only 4 months into term, and then the animal came out. So there was no Chavaya over here. Since there was no Chavaya over here, where it came into existence, where it was born, and therefore it attained Kedusha, everybody would agree that it's Chulin. So that cannot be the scenario that we're speaking about, that it's a case where you makdish the animal, and then only later did it become pregnant, because over there, everybody agreed it was Chulin. That's as opposed to the case where you magdish the animal, brekanit, then it became pregnant afterwards, and then gave birth to the baby at full term. At that point, that is definitely a vlad chatat according to everyone, because the kedusha that devolved upon that fetus did not come from an adam. It was never mukdash, ayde anybody. The hekdesh, according to everyone, came from the mother. There was no human haktasha of that ubar, because the ubar didn't exist at the time that the person was magdish the mother. And therefore, both Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada are going to agree in that case, that's a vlad chatat. But that's because it reached full term. And therefore, it was had a havaya, and that's why it's a vlad chatat. Over here, the term was cut short because you shefted it before it reached full term. And because of that, it would have been chulin, according to everyone, because the kedusha of the mother never devolved upon this ubar. Therefore, it must be a situation in which the animal is already pregnant at the time that you makdish the animal. Now, what's the machloket here? So according to the Tanakhama, who says that it is basically a chatat, and that the kedusha, it devolves upon the ubar here, he holds like Rabbi Yochanan, that you can independently create kedusha on the ubar at the time that you're magdish it. Because if you think that it's the mother that is giving over the kedusha, we just said that the mother's kedusha only devolves at the time of birth, or the time when the animal comes into existence after a full term. So now, the only way to get kedusha on the animal prior to that point in time is to believe that that entity is independent enough that you could be makdish it. And that's exactly what's happening according to the Tanakhama. According to the first braita that we brought, that it's a full-fledged chatat, he holds like Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, since he holds like Rabbi Yochanan, you can be makdish the ubar separately from the mother. So when you were makdish the mother, you also were makdish the ubar. And we saw that yesterday, that the Gemara says, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, when you're makdish the mother, the given assumption is that the ubar will also become kadosh along with the mother, unless you indicate otherwise. But that kedusha is not a kedusha that's coming from the mother, but rather a kedusha that you are basically makdish the mother and makdish the ubar. And so therefore, here you have kedusha that is happening in utero, based on Rabbi Yochanan Shita, and that's why when you shecht it and you find this live fetus, that live fetus is a chatat, because you were able to be magdishit in utero. So that'll be the view of the first Tana, or the first Braita. And then, the second Braita will be according to Bar Pado. Second Braita is Bar Pado, who says that the only way for Kedusha to devolve upon the fetus is through the mother. And that can only happen, Bahavyaya. That can only happen at the moment of birth. And since no birth took place over here because you cut it short when you shechted the animal and it was before the fetus reached full term, so therefore there's no kedusha that ever devolved upon this fetus and it remains chulin. Now, Rashi over here says, Olahachi nakat chai. This is why the Braita said chai, which is a chiddush, the buta kamashvalan. The chiddush, the lo amrinan ho v'chayu havyato chashivle. Don't think just because it's walking around now and it's alive, that's the equivalent of being born. And that's what the chiddush is, that even though the animal is alive and the animal is a viable entity at this point, walking around, that doesn't mean that it had a havaya. Havaya means full term and being born. It's not enough that you're alive here at 4 months to be considered a havaya, and therefore, according to the second Tana, it's chulin, even though it's walking around, even though it survived the shechita of the mother. And therefore here you are suggesting that the machloket between The two braitot is dependent on this machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada as to whether you can create kedusha in utero. Rabbi Yochanan, where you can't create kedusha in utero, that's exactly what happens here when you're makdish the animal when it's pregnant, and that's why when the fetus is born, quote unquote, it is kadosh, it is a chatat. Whereas according to the second braita or Bar Pada, since you can't have any impact on the fetus in utero, then the only time it would be become kadosh is when it's born to the mother, because the mother is what gives it or imbues it with kedusha. And since that never happened, there was no birth over here, and even though it's walking around and it's viable, but there was no birth, therefore there's no din of kedusha, and that's why it's called in the gamre. So that's the explanation of the machloket according to Rashi. And the Gemara says, look, that does not have to be the machloket between them. Hanei tanei b'hakam eflegei. The machloket is about a different matter. The Marsavar Vladot Kodoshim Bahavyatan Hin Kodoshim. Marsavar Vlade Kodoshim Bimeiman Hin Kodoshim. The reason, as Rashi pointed out, that we had a problem setting it up with an animal that was not pregnant and then became pregnant after it was Kadosh was because there's no question. Everybody would believe that it's Kudin because animals become Kadosh Bahavyatan. And what the Gemara is pointing out is that's not Muskam Lakol. It's a Machloket. Machloket as to when the Kedusha devolves upon the Ubar. One possibility is Bahavaya, Bahavyatan, when they're born. The other possibility is Bimeiman, when they're conceived. When they're in their mother's womb, when they're in utero, they automatically become an extension of the mother and they attain the Kedusha immediately. And in that way, you could explain the Machloket between them in the following manner, which is the Tanakama who believes that the animal is Kadosh Bechatat is because he believes that it becomes Kadosh Bimeiman. The equivalent of Rabbi Yochanan in an active sense, when you had a pregnant animal, you could be makdish both of them. This is the same effect in a passive sense, which is that since the conception of the animal in the mother passes the kedusha to the ubar, so that happened already in utero. It doesn't matter then when you shechted the animal, that ubar is already kadosh, and that's why it has a din of a chatat. On the other hand, the second braita believes that it's only behavyatan and kedoshin. And here you have a lack of havaya, because it wasn't born, or it didn't reach full term, and it wasn't born, and therefore there was no kedusha ever that devolved upon the ubar, and that's why it remains chulin. Now, as Rashi points out over here, at this point there's no machloket, or it doesn't have any impact on Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada, because over here we're not speaking about an animal that was pregnant at the time that you were makdish it. We're speaking about bladei kodeshim, which means that the animal was nitkadesh before it became pregnant. And this has no relevance to the machloket of Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada. And in this way, that the Tanaim would not be taking a position with regards to Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada. Vivai tema, some say, chad tanuhu. It is one tana, hada mihalein matnaita. One of these braitot believes v'maktish beima v'achar kach nitabra. The case where the hektesh happened prior to the pregnancy. And then it became pregnant afterward. Vehada minhon, and then the other braita believes shikdisha miuberet, that they were makdishit while it was pregnant. So the way Rashi explains this, the kuliyama, everybody believes kedusha chalal ubarim the altar ki Rabbi Yochanan. So Rashi says that this latter explanation basically says that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and both of the tanaim are following the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. The only question is, when did it happen? Did it happen prior to the animal becoming pregnant, which means that the kedusha is not coming from your imbuing it with kedusha, it's coming because the mother is imbuing it with kedusha, and in that case you need havaya. Then you need to wait until it becomes kadosh, till it's born. That never happened because you cut it short when you shechted it, and that's the explanation of this second braita. The second braita that says it's kulin believes that the case here was that you were makdishit before it was pregnant, then it became pregnant, and kedusha only happens behavaya, and that didn't happen over here. The first braita, on the other hand, holds like Rabbi Yochanan, and it was a case where you were makdishit meuberet. Since you were makdishit meuberet, both the mother and the fetus get their kedusha from your hakdasha, and therefore that can happen even pre-havaya, because you're able to be makdishit in utero, and given that, now you have kedusha that's on the mother and kedusha on the ubar, and that ubar then has independent kedusha from the mother. And that will be the explanation. Now, obviously, the difficulty in Rashi's explanation is, then the Gemara is in the end saying that all the Tanaim align with the position of Rabbi Yochanan. That means that leaves Bar Pada out in the cold, according to this third answer. The first was that it was a machloket Tanaim about Rabbi Yochanan Bar Pada. We rejected that and said, no, it's about a totally different case. It's a case where the animal was not pregnant when it was Nikdadesh, and therefore it has nothing to do with Rabbi Yochanan Bar Pada. And his last answer is, oh yes, it's all according to Rabbi Yochanan. It's just a question of when you were Magdish it. Were you Magdish it post the pregnancy or pre the pregnancy? But that would then heavily favor Rabbi Yochanan's position. To offset that, you have the Ot Yud Aleph in the Shita Mikubetzet, which is in the back of the Gemara, their Hashmatot from the Shita Mikubetzet. And in Ot Yud Aleph, he brings other Girsaot, two other Girsaot that actually work in this case to align it with Bar Poda and not with Rabbi Yochanan. And that's helpful because then it means that you could explain it, at least according to Bar Poda. If that's the case, then it doesn't automatically assume that Rabbi Yochanan's correct here. End of case, because all the Tanaim hold like him. He says, V'yesh Sfarim de Garsina. And there's some Sfarim, not like, this is not the Girsa that we have. According to our Girsa, it turns out that the Gemara is speaking about the second Brayta first, and then the first Brayta second, according to Rashi's explanation. That's how he aligns it. But this Girsa says, Kamaita bidhifrish rekanit. The first case was a case where you were mafrishit when it was not pregnant. V'savar b'mei iman hein kdoshin. And they hold that you become kadosh b'mei iman. So what they're saying is the first case, not the second case, is when you were magdishit, when before the animal became pregnant. And then when it became pregnant, the reason it's kadosh, according to that first brayta, is because the animal has become kadosh in utero when it is imbued by the mother. Ubat brayta, and the second brayta, behifrish chatat mi'uberet. It's a case where you were magdishit when it was pregnant, v'savar ein kedusha chala liubarim, ker bar poda. And he holds like bar poda that a kedusha cannot devolve upon an ubar before it's born. You can't imbue it while it's still in utero with kedusha. So then it would work out that the situation is all according to bar poda now, because you've reversed the positions in the braytot. V'afagav de la bar poda tafsik kedushat imei, even though for bar poda the mother's kedusha works, I know dafka bevladot kodoshim gemurim. That's only true when you have full-fledged vladot kodoshim kigon aval kedushati mei lomahani ad shiulad. On the other hand, if you're magdishit and then the mother imbues it with kedusha, that only happens at the moment of birth, not before the point of birth. And that's why, even according to Bar Poda over here, you will not have kedusha in the second brayta, even though the mother is kadosh. So that's one way to explain it that would then align with Bar Poda's position. And then in addition to that, he brings another girsa, usfarim achirim. And he brings another girsa that also then follows the position of Bar Poda, and where he says, that kule alma savreke Bar Poda, de'en kedusha chalal ubar. In that latter explanation, he brings another view as to what the difference in the cases is, whether it's akdish losof nibdabra, or it's a case where that nitabra ulusov kikdisha, but he reverses the cases and says that it's kuleyama like Bar Poda. So there, this girsa of the Shita Mikubetzet helps us to offset what Rashi is doing in the Gemara, which is saying that the Gemara is basically saying it's all like Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore the Tanaim are both holding like Rabbi Yochanan, which is very difficult, because then what does Bar Poda do with the Braita? So the answer is that we have two other alternate girsaot that basically use the same structure as what we're proposing in the Abiyatema, but sets it up like Bar Poda. If that's the case, then Bar Poda does have options to explain the Braita in this manner, based on this machloket, but come out with the opposite conclusion that he's correct and not Rabbi Yochanan. And now the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, it really should be Tan, it's a Mishnah further on. Kil Ayim, Vitrefa, Vyotse Dofen, Tumtum Vandroginus. These five types of animals are so problematic that Lokdoshim, they cannot become kadosh, velo maktishim, and then it cannot convey or imbue kedusha in other animals. So, generally, we have a principle that you can place kedusha even on balei mumim. Now, with regards to certain mumim, like when it's a mum kavua beforehand, you're going to be maktishit for damim, you can't be maktishit kedusha tavuf. On the other hand, if it was already kadosh, and then the mum happens, it has kedusha tavuf, and it comes to sulei mukdashim. With regards to tamura, we already learned that it's tov bira, rabbi tov, That means that you can even have the Kedusha transferred onto a Baal Mum. So you would have thought that it's so powerful that it goes in a Baal Mum, that it can also apply to these Mumim, or these problems, like Kilayim, Trefa, Yotzei Dopen, Tumtum, and Adruvinos. And what Rabbi Eliezer and the Mishnah is saying, as we're going to see in a second, is Lokdoshim, they cannot become Kadosh, Velomakdishim, and they cannot convey Kedusha. Vamar Shmuel, Lokdoshim bit Murah. What does it mean that they can't become Kadosh? It means that Tmura can't devolve upon these animals. So if you try to transfer Kedusha from an animal that is Kadosh onto these animals, even though it would work if the recipient or the Chulin animal is a Baal Mum, if it's one of these problematic animals, it will not work. Velo makdishim lasot Tmura. And what does it mean, lo makdishim? If they are Kadosh, they cannot convey Kedusha, they cannot convey Tmura. Vitanyo. And we have a Beraita, Amar Rabbi Meir. So here's where the issue arises, which is a question on basically what Shmuel is saying. Shmuel's explanation of Rabbi Eliezer needs explanation now, which is, Mechar Sheinan Kedoshim, Heach Maktishim. If they can't become Kadosh, how can they have the possibility of conveying Tmura? Meaning that it's understandable that Tmura cannot devolve upon them because of the fact that they are too big a Baal Mum that it doesn't work. But if you can't ever get Kedusha on them, then how could you have a Havamina that their Kedusha would be passed to something else that you have to say it's a sore, it doesn't work? So when it says, I atam mutzei, ela magdish beima, it only could be a case where you were magdish the beima, va'akarach nitrefa, that you were magdish an animal, and it became a trefa after the fact. That means that it was already Kadosh before it became a trefa. That's why it remains Kadosh. It's Kadosh now with a mum in it or a problem with it. It won't go on the Mizbeach. But nevertheless, now you could transfer that Kedusha, possibly through Tmura. Rabbi Eliezer comes to tell you that that won't work. It's learned from Sukkim, we'll get to later on in the Masechta. So that's one feasible time where you can have the Kedusha devolve upon one of these items, by a Treifa, or be Magdish Vlad, v'yatzad derech dofen. Or it's a case where you Magdish the fetus in utero, and then it comes out as a cesarean section, which is one of the five items that we mentioned up above, which were Kilayim, Trefa, Yotzei Dofen, Tumtum, and Androgynous. We're addressing two of them, Trefa and Yotzei Dofen. I could find manifestations of where they're Kadosh with the following two scenarios. One scenario is it was Kadosh, then became a Trefa. The second scenario is where a case where it was in utero and you were Magdishit, and then it was Yotzei Dofen, Alma, Kadish, Vlad. There you see that you can have a Vlad become Kadosh before it is born, and while it's still in utero. So now the Gemara answers, Amre betam b'meit mima, when it comes to an animal without a mum, that's inside of an animal that doesn't have a mum, and the mother and the fetus are both mimim, afilu parpoto nami modi. Then even Rabbi Parpoto agrees, the Kaddish, that that works like Rabbi Yochanan. So he agrees to Rabbi Yochanan in that scenario, and that'll solve our problem here, which is that here you have a fetus inside of a mother that's a mima. And so the Tam is now Kadosh, and when it comes out Yotzei Dofen, now you have Yotzei Dofen sitting on top of what was already Kadosh. It preceded the Yotzei Dofen. And for that reason, now you have a case where you thought or you could possibly create Tmura, and Rabbi Eliezer tells you you can't. Lo nechluku. The machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Parpoto is only b'tam b'mei balat mum. When there's a Tam inside of a mother that's a balat mum. Bar Parpoto savar, kevin di'imei lo makdishin kedushat Haguf, since the mother cannot attain Kedushat Haguf, Hu Nami Lo Kaddish, so too the fetus can't reach that level of Kedushat Haguf. It is limited by whatever the mother's Kedusha is. Rabbi Yochanan Savar, Hani Kebet Beimot Inu. Yochanan says they're totally independent, and therefore, Imehi Delo Mikdusha, the mother can't reach Kedushat Haguf, we've only reached Kedushat Tamim, Aval Hu Kadosh, but the Ubar, or the fetus, can reach independently the Kedushat Haguf. That then narrows the scope of their machloket significantly, because in a case of Tamim and inside of a Tmima, even Bar Parpoto agrees that you can be Makdish that fetus, because the mother's Kedusha is the same level as the Kedusha of the fetus, and therefore it works. The problem here is where the mother's Kedusha is subpar because it can only reach Kedushat Tamim. In that case, can you then separate away the Ubar and imbue it with Kedusha that's different than the mother? And Parpoto says, no, it's capped out at the mother's Kedusha. And Rabbi Yochanan says they're so independent that the mother's Kedusha has no bearing over here, and the Ubar can be Kadosh. The Gemara goes, Lishna Achrina. The Lishna Achrina here is very difficult. It's in our Gemara, and the numerous Mishonim are Gores Lishna Achrina. The problem with it is that the next part of the Gemara is not necessarily a question, even though it asks it as a question. And the Shita Mikubetzet points out that there were those that did not have the Gears of Lishna Achrina here, and it seems to make more sense, and he says he thinks that Rashi did not have the Gears of Lishna Achrina, and I'll show you why in a second why Rashi probably did not have this Girsa. Aval, this is the continuation of Rabbi Eliezer's statement and Rabbi Meir's explanation of it. Aval kilayim v'tumtum adroginus, iata motzeh l'bevladei kodoshim. The only way to have a manifestation of kilayim tumtum adroginus is in a case where they are born to an animal, meaning that it is a mother who is kedosha, and then these animals are created inside of this animal. That's how you can have them be Vladei Kodoshim Uke Rabbi Yehuda. And according to Rabbi Yehuda in the upcoming Mishnah, who says Sheomer, a Vlad Oset Mura, Vladot of Kodoshim can create Mura after they are born. That will be the case, the scenario where it can happen. So we have three different scenarios into get a point where these five different Psulim can become Kadosh, and then you have a Havamina that they convey Mura, and we say they can't. For the Trefa, it's the easiest. The animal was kadosh, and then became a trefa. For the yotze dolphin, it's a case where the ubar was kadosh, or made kadosh, and then it was a yotze dolphin. The latter three, which are tumtum adroginus and kilayim, can't be when they are an ubar, because if that is what they were as an ubar, you couldn't put the kedusha on them. You can't create kedusha on these types of sulim, because we already said you can't be makdish them. And there's no time before that they existed. Since they always existed as an androgynous, or always existed as a tumtum, or always existed as kilayim, there's no way to get in front of that, or be makdishit before that. So the only way for that to work is if the mother was mukdeshit, and then she conveys that kedusha to them, and they're born from a mother that is kadosh, and they are vladei kodoshim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who can convey tmura, and Rabbi Elazar is saying about that, that these three items cannot convey tmura. And now the Gemara says, Aleinu delokache gufayu. It's only those three that their gufin cannot accept kedusha. The reason we have to say that it happened through vladei kodoshim is because you can't create kedusha in utero on these items because they're already kilayim. They're already androgynous and tumtum, and you can't make them kadosh in utero. Aval ubarim achirim, any other ubar that does not have that problem, kedoshim, you could make them kadosh. So that's the diuk that we would make out of that, and it'd be a problem for Bar Podo, because here it seems to indicate that you can create kedusha in something in utero. The problem is that the diuk is not a great diuk out of the Gemara here. Or you could have just said that the diuk is that only these three items, when they are born as vladei kodoshim, cannot convey tmura. But others that are born like that can convey tuma, and that'd be a perfect diuk. And have nothing to do with in utero. You don't have to say that in utero there's something different about other ubarim in order to have this part of Rabbi Meir's statement be true and have a diuk in it with regards to other items. Therefore, it makes sense not to say that this is a lishna achrina, but rather this is just a continuation of Rabbi Meir's statement, and the Gemara is just finishing off Rabbi Meir. And then have the whole Gemara now that explains the question be referencing back to the Yotze Dolphin case. And that's how Rashi reads that. Because if you look in Rashi, the last Rashi on the Amud, he says, Kilayim tumtum adroginus yata motzei ela bevladei kodashim. And then right after that, one line down there, he says, Migdektani b'makdish ubar v'yotze derech dolphin, daihu delo kadish legufei, that only in that case where you're makdish the ubar, and then it's yotze derech dolphin, that's the case when it's not kadish legufei, the mevat tmura, it can't make tmura, ha, lo yatsa derech dofen. Had it not come out as a derech dofen, kadish mikdusha kamaita. It would have worked, and the kedusha would have remained with it. Kedusha da guf, va'avit tmura. And it would be successful at creating tmura. So you see that Rashi still thinks the question, after bringing this whole thing about the kilayim, the tumtum and androgynous, the question is from derech dofen. And so Rashi basically sees that section, the Gemara that we just read before with the question in it, it's just postponed till down here. It's not a separate question that we're bringing here in the Lishna Achrina. It's all one big quote, and then one question. And the question all comes from Derech Dofen. So you see that Rashi, in all likelihood, did not have the Lashon of Lishna Achrina, and it makes sense not to have it, because the Diuk out of this, kilayim tumtum and androgynos is not mukrach. You don't have to say, well, kilayim tumtum and androgynos can't become kadosh in utero. They can only become kadosh through birth, but other ubarim can become kadosh in utero. You don't have to say that. You could just simply say that kilayim tumtum and androgynos are differentiated in the fact that when they are born as what they call the shim, they don't have the capacity to create tmura according to Rabbi Yehuda. But any other animal could create tmura after it's born, but that doesn't mean that they are kadosh in utero. It just means that when they are born, they have a havyatanya, hey? And that's coming because they're vladei kodashim. It has nothing to do with the machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Pada. And since it's not a diuk that's mukrach, it's very problematic to suggest that this lishna achrina is a totally separate question. And now again, we're going to give the same answer that we gave before, which also seems to indicate that it wasn't two separate questions, but rather it was one question, and the same answer was given. Amar Abaye, tam b'mei tmima, d'mira kol kadish kufei. Everybody agrees that when it's a tam instead of a tmima, that you can be makdish the ubar. Eleki plige, bar pada Rabbi Yochanan only argue, b'mei balat mum. When the ubar is inside of a mother who is a balat mum, the parbada sarah came in d'imei lo kadish kufa, since the mother's kedusha is not a kedusha de guf, ihu nami lo kadish. The ubar also doesn't attain kedusha de guf. Ela demei only reaches the capped out limit of being kedusha damim. Rav Yochanan sevar ubar lav yerechimo. The ubar is so substantially separate from its mother. Va'af agav demei lo kadish de gufa. Even though the mother doesn't reach kedusha de guf, vlad mi kadish de gufai. The ubar can retain that kedusha de guf because they're totally independent entities. So that would be the conclusion here, which it seems from the Gemara, that Bar Pada admits in a large number of cases to that position of Rabbi Yochanan. The argument's limited to a case where the mother is a limiting factor in the fact that she is a balat mom. And that's what their machloket is about, is how influential is the mother over the fetus? Can she cap out the fetus's ability to become kedushat haguf? Or is it independent enough that it can reach a kedushat haguf independent of the mother? Then the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Halo b'muktashim homer raglash ozo. Rabbi Yossi says in our Mishnah, in a regular case of Ekdesh, wouldn't it be true that if you're Makdish the animal's leg, it would then spread to the entirety of the animal? And then he tries to extrapolate that into the world of Tmura. The Gemara is going to discuss now this statement of Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. Tan Rabbanan, Yachol homer raglash ozo la, Kula Ola. You would think that if you said that the leg of this Ola should become an Ola, that then should automatically distribute the Kedusha throughout the animal. Talmud Lomar, we quote the Pasuk again in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Tet, where it says, V'im Be'ma, Asher Yakrivu Mimenu Korban Lashem, if it's a Be'ma from which you can bring a Korban Lashem, Kol Asher Yiten Mimenu Lashem Yakodesh. Everything that you give from it to Hashem will be Kodesh. And that's what he say here. Kol asher yiten mimenu l'Hashem yeh Kodesh. Mimenu l'Hashem v'lo kulo l'Hashem. Whatever it is that you're makdish, that's what's Kodesh. Nothing more. It doesn't spread. It doesn't include anything more than what you were makdish. Yochol tetzeh lo chulin. You would think then that it could be released to chulin. A question as to what that means. Rashi over here says that if you were redeeming that one leg, then you could take away the dusha from the animal, and then that would resolve your issue. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, maybe you then could redeem the remainder of the animal, or you could utilize the remainder of the animal as chulin. That's what it means. They say the chulin. Tamalomar, iye kodesh. It remains kadosh. So you don't have the capacity to remove it, because it has kedushat haguf. Kedushat haguf doesn't get removed unless there's a mum here. There's no mum over here. Therefore, you can't take off the kedushat and transfer it onto the monies, because it's kedushat haguf. Therefore, it remains on the Eiver, according to Rashi, or according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, there's some form of kedusha that remains on the entirety of the animal that you need to deal with. Ha, Ketzad, then what are you going to do? You're stuck here with an animal that has a leg that has kedushat haguf, and the remainder of the animal is kulin. Timacher letzorchei olot. What you do is you sell it to a party that needs an olah. V'dameh kulin chutz midvei eiver sheba. And basically, they pay for the animal, X that one leg. So all the monies that are given towards chulin, because the remainder of the animal is chulin. The part that you pay for that one leg is kadosh, be kedushat olah, or you may not even have to sell it to him. You can grant it him, divrei Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yehuda. That's the view of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, that the Kedusha does not spread once you are makdish a limb of the animal. It remains on that limb, and you solve it in that manner, which is that you sell off the animal to somebody to use as an olah, X that leg. Rabbi Yossi, for Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, believe, minayin lomer ragla shel zo olah shukula olah. How do you know when you say that the leg of this animal is an olah, that it spreads through the entirety of the animal and the whole thing is an olah? Shenemar, because the pasuk says, kol asher yiten mimenu l'Hashem, k'shu omer, iyeh kodesh. It says, anything that you give to Hashem, iyeh kodesh. What's iyeh kodesh? Lerabot et kula. Iyeh gives a havaya, acheret, to tell you the whole thing becomes kodesh, meaning that the entire animal then becomes kodesh. Amar mar, timacher l'tzorche olot. So this is a problem. When we dealt with this sugya in Arachin, we said, you know what, we're not going to speak about it now, but the Gemara in Temura is going to deal with the problem, which is, how can you sell this animal as an olah? When you sell it to the party that needs it as an olah, he's buying an olah missing a leg, because the leg was already kadosh b'kedushat olah from someone else. So he's buying an animal with a missing a leg. So how does he do such a thing? That's what the Gemara asks here. Timachel tzorche olot, v'aka mayti behema mechuseret eiver. He's bringing an animal missing a limb, because that limb doesn't belong to him, and that limb is already kadosh b'dushat olah before he ever brought it. How is he discharging his obligation to bring an olah? Amaroba b'omer, arei olah b'chaya. It's when he says that I'm going to bring an olah whose roshei evarim are b'chayim, are living. As Rashi says over here, arei olah l'akriv kol evarim shebeimah chaya mimeno. I'm going to bring all the limbs that are life-sustaining limbs of this animal as an olah. So he doesn't commit to a full animal. He commits to bring all the limbs that are life-sustaining limbs. At minimum, I need all of the life-sustaining limbs to be there. Doesn't mean I can't bring more than that. Doesn't mean I can't bring an olah greater than that. But I need an olah that includes at least that in order to discharge my obligation. And we know that this regel, this leg that we're speaking about here, is not a life-sustaining item. Because if it was a life-sustaining item, even Rabbi Yehuda, and assumption Rabbi Meir as well, agreed that if it's davar sheneshamat luyabo, if it's a life-sustaining limb, then they agree that it spreads to the entirety of the animal and does not remain in that one limb. So it's clear that the machloket we're speaking about here is a machloket about a part of the leg that doesn't have the shamat luyabo. And so what we're saying is that the other party who's buying it as an olah made a commitment to bring all the limbs that are life-sustaining. And since this leg is not a life-sustaining limb, it's not as if he's missing what he needs for his nether. There is a lishna achrina that's brought in the sheet of mikubetzit over here, which is v'ha mighty bema demaktish gufa eveleta lekula didei. Isn't he bringing an animal where it's not kadosh all of his own accord? Amarava kagon damar bezuza minada bema lola. He says that I'm going to bring a zuz worth of an ola or this animal as an olah. So it's a case where the person in his nether did not commit to bring a full olah. He only committed to bring a zuz worth of an olah. But the language is a little difficult because the language over here says that he's going to bring a zuz from this animal. Problem is he doesn't own this animal. So how could he be saying a nether that he's going to bring a zuz from this animal when he didn't own the animal? So it has to be that he made probably a more generic statement, which is, I'm going to bring a olah that's worth at least a zuz. And so then when he buys this animal, which is in excess of a zuz, he is successful at bringing the olah or discharging his nether. And therefore, even with the missing leg, it's still sufficient to discharge his nether because he never committed to a full olah. Committed to a price of an olah or a certain amount of money towards an olah. And that he accomplishes when he buys the olah, which as Rashi says is worth more than a zuz over here. And you can see that in Rashi, Rashi brings it as a lishna achrina yushalmi. That he says that the first lashon, the one that we have in our Gemara, is the Bavli. And then there's a lishna achrina yushalmi, which is koned amar kezuzah min adab beima leola, which is the girsa that we just brought from the shita mikubetzin. Right. So now the Gemara moves on to this idea that Rabbi Yehuda agrees by davar shenishamat luya bo, it spreads to the entirety of the animal. And the question is, what is that type of aver that we're speaking about? Now, as to why it is that we know that Rabbi Yehuda says that, is because in all likelihood, the Shita Mikubetzit says this in the Ode Hey, where he says, Gilyon, Imikra, Imisvara. it can be brought from a pasuk or from a logical argument. So you see here, the Shit Mekubetzet brings this idea that the pasuk can be equally darshan the way that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda do, as well as the way Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon do. Since we have a two drashot that are equally plausible, we have a view in the Gemara, when you have two possible drashot that are equally plausible, we darshan both. And so that's what the Shita Mekubetzet suggests is the view of Rabbi Yehuda. We darshan like we are, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, which says that kol asher yitem mimenu l'Hashem is kodesh, and therefore only the limb that we are makdish is kodesh. But we also darshan like Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, that if you are makdish a portion, it's iyeh kodesh, the entirety of it becomes kodesh. But we just say that it's in a different instance. That's in an instance where it's a davar shenishamat tluyabo. The case that we say is in a case where it's eina nishamat tluyabo. Therefore, they will have both meanings of the pasuk or explanations of the pasuk be viable, plausible, by explaining it in two different instances. And again, he says you could do it misvara from logic as well, which is once the item reaches the size of being an issue that it's in Shema Tluyabo, it's the equivalent of the entire animal, because it's going to take the life of the animal, which is the entirety of the animal. So that would be a logical argument as to why Rabbi Yehuda says this. That's the source for Rabbi Yehuda's position, that there's a distinction between Davar Sheneshama Tluyabo and a Davar Sheena Neshama Tluyabo. Now, with regards to Davar Sheneshama Tluyabo, what is the definition of that? Amar Rav Chista, Mode Rav Yehuda, B'davar Sheoseh Ota Treifa. Or, in Sfarim Achirim, it's Sheneshama Tluyabo. Rav Chista says that the defining factor is something that makes the animal into a Treifa, or something that Neshama Tluyabo. Rav Amar, B'davar Sheoseh Ota Nevela. It's only an item that makes it into a nevela that then Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it will spread to the entirety of the animal. Rav Sheshet Amar, B'davar Shimeita. It's going to be an item that will kill the animal. It's Ma'ika ben Rav Chista the Rova. What's the nafkamina between Rav Chista and Rova as to whether it's a treifa or a nevela? Yigbenayu, treifa chaya. Their machloket is about whether a treifa can live. That's a machloket that we saw in the Gemara in Chulin, as to whether treifot mean that you will not live. A treifa is meita. Or is it a possibility that a treifa can live, but nevertheless, it's problematic? So what we're going to say is, Rav Chista savar la'akimand amar treifa ein achaya. Chista holds like the one who says the treifa will not live, and therefore, when it becomes a treifa, it's a davar shenishama tluyabo. That's sufficient to say that the animal won't live if you have this problem, and that means that it will then create the kedusha that will spread to the entirety of the animal, according to Rav Yehuda. V'rabba savar la'akimand amar treifa chaya. And Rav holds like the one who says that a treifa can live. And since it can live, that can't be the definition, according to Rav Yehuda, of the limb or aver that makes it that it'll spread to the entirety of the animal. And just as a side note, that we're not going to get deeply into this, Tosafot points out that this is the opposite of their positions in other places in Shas, including Bechorot. And then he writes, "Bezo min ha-sugyot ha-fuchot shebashas." These are what we call those flipped sugyot in Shas. I mentioned this the other day with regards to Lav Shebichlalot. The Tosafot also says a similar idea about the Lav Shebichlalot, where Abaye and Rava's positions are flipped in different places in Shas. That's what they call Sugyot HaFuchot, which is that sometimes in Shas, they have the Amoraim with their position in the following. And then other places in Shas, it's the same Amoraim, but just the opposite positions. So now, Ma'ika ben Rava the Rav Sheshet. What's the difference between Rava and Rav Sheshet, where Rava says that a nevela is sufficient, whereas Rav Sheshet needs it to be meta. Igvenayu de Rabbi Elazar. The Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar is found in the Gemara in Chulin, who says that if you have a leg that is removed from the hip, and it's visible when the animal crouches, it's deemed to be a nevela. That means it's a living nevela. Nitla yerech v'chalau shela. And if you take out the yerech, they take out the leg, and the hip air joint where it would have been inside the animal, there's a hole there and you can see that hole, it's visible, it's a nevela. So that's something that is alive, but it's deemed to be dead. So that, according to Rava, is sufficient. Rava savala ki Rabbi Elazar, he holds like Rabbi Elazar, deemed dead is dead, and that's enough to make it that it will spread to the entirety of the animal. Rav Sheshet lo savala ki Rabbi Elazar, he says dead is only when you're dead. Deemed dead is not enough. So therefore it'll only be when you take out a vital organ. You take out the heart, you take out the lungs, that's when it'll be considered a neshama tluyabo. So if you makdish one of those evarim, then it will spread to the entirety of the animal. So that's what the difference between these three amoraim's positions in Rabbi Yehuda as to what they define as the threshold for something to be considered davar sheneshama tluya bo. Meitave, Amar Rabbi, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda b'davar sheneshama tluya bo, b'divrei Rabbi Yossi b'davar sheneshama tluya bo. Rabbi Yehuda's position makes sense, or I favor Rabbi Yehuda's position with something that the neshama is not dependent on, and I favor Rabbi Yossi's position in something that the neshama is tluya bo. What it seems is that Rabbi is coming to take a middle position over here. And la michlal de poligale de Rabbi Yehuda. Sounds like that Rabbi Yehuda argues in both cases, meaning that Rabbi Yehuda argues both by nishama she'ena tuya bo and nishama tuya bo. And that's what Rabbi says about that. By nishama she'tuya bo, I favor Rabbi Yossi, because I don't agree with Rabbi Yehuda there. Rabbi Yehuda argues, I think Rabbi Yossi's right. Ah, davar she'ena nishama tuya bo, they argue there too, but I think then Rabbi Yehuda is a better position. But bishlama nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda, when you say that I think Rabbi Yehuda's position is better by something that ain't a neshama tluya bo, michal de poligalei de Rabbi Yossi, the inference is that they argue, that's fine, because we know they do argue in that case. If you say Rabbi Yossi's position seems to be a better position with regards to an aver that the neshama tluya bo, la michal de poligalei de Rabbi Yehuda, sounds like from that Rabbi Yehuda argues on Rabbi Yossi in that case, and not like we just suggested that Bode, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda agrees, but davar shen nishma tuya bo, b'tiyuvta dekulu. It's a question in all three of the Amoraim that we brought before. It's a strong refutation of all their positions. It says, lo, chasurei mechsera, missing some key words in the statement of Rabbi. That is vachitani. Nirin davi Rabbi Yossi, the Rabbi Yehuda, b'davar shen nishma tuya bo. That Rabbi Yossi's position is accepted by Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Rabbi Yossi's position, but davar she'nishma tluya bo, she'av Rabbi Yehuda lo nechlak alav, because Rabbi Yehuda only argued with him, elu b'davar she'ena nishma tluya bo. Aval, b'davar she'nishma tluya bo, modile. So they read the nirin of Rabbi as being different in the two statements of the Braita. In the statement where he says, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda, there he means literally, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda and not Rabbi Yossi, with davar she'ena nishma tluya bo, because there they argue and he favors Rabbi Yehuda's position. In the case where it says davar shen nishma tuya bo, there when he says nirin divrei Rabbi Yossi, he doesn't mean I favor Rabbi Yossi over Rabbi Yehuda. He's saying Rabbi Yossi's position nirin to Rabbi Yehuda, and so therefore it's inconsistent usage of the word nirin inside of the Braita. But in that way, it solves the problem as not to be a tiyufta on these Amoraim that say that Rabbi Yehuda agrees by davar shen nishma tuya bo. Now we have a question by Rava. Rava poses the following question. Be'of mahu. What's the din with regards to an oaf? So Rashi over here claims that this question is the Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yossi, who believes when you have an aver, and the aver then causes the kushat to spread, is that only true by a behema? Or is that also true by an oaf? That's how Rashi phrases the question. If you look down in the notes that are below Rashi in the Ot Aleph, there he says, Ayin Rashak, Shekotav Sharambam Mifereish to Rabbi Yehuda boy. That the Rambam believes that this question is even according to Rabbi Yehuda. The reason that is because the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, and then after paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, brings this question about the oath. And so he clearly sees this as being a question, even in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the truth is that it could be a question in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda believes that when you have an Eivesh and a Shema Tuliyabo, it does spread to the entire of the animal. And if that's the case, then you could ask that question. If it works by behema, does it also work by oaf? So it would seem that the Rambam makes sense to say the question could be equally according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rashi limit it to Rabbi Yossi? So the answer to that might be that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's obvious. Rabbi Yehuda's statement that davar shen nishma tuya bo is really a logical statement that was on the Shita Mekubetz. It could be from the pasuk, but it also could be a logical argument, which is that if it's a life-sustaining limb, and because it's a life-sustaining limb, therefore it spreads to the entirety of the animal, then why should it make a difference whether it's a behema or it's an oaf? It should be equally applicable to both of them, because it's not limited by the pasuk. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi's position that an aver she'ena nishma tluya bo spreads to the entirety of the animal, that is sourced out of the pasuk. And the pasuk does have a limitation in it, which is, v'behema, asher yakrivu mimenu korban l'Hashem, kol asher din mimenu l'Hashem yakodesh, there in the pasuk it mentions in behema. So maybe Rabbi Yossi's position is only relevant by behema, not by an oaf. And that's why Rashi, in all likelihood, limited the question to Rabbi Yossi's position and not to Rabbi Yehuda's position. So it's by Rava, ba'of mahu. Behema Amar Rachmana. The Torah says that you have a behema. This is applicable to Pavla behema hi. And it's not a behema, it's an oaf. Odilma Korban Amar Rachmana. Vayinami Korbanu. The pasuk later on says, Ve'yakrivu imenu Korban Lashem. The question is, what's the defining feature of here? Is it behema or Korban? If you think it's behema, then the oaf is out. If you think that it's Korban, then the oaf is in and has the same din. Teiku, we leave that as an unresolved issue. Right now, the Gemara says, Vayi Rova. Rova asked the following question. Hikdish Ever the Damav. If a person is Makdish, a single Ever for its monetary value, Mahu the Tichot Lake Kedushata Guf. Can that then cause Kedushata Guf to devolve upon the animal? This is a Gemara that we saw in Arachin, and the Gemara asked the exact same question with the exact same Safek with regards to this question. Miyamar, do we say, Kevin the Nachta Lake Kedushata Mim? Since the Kedushat Amim is successful at devolving upon this animal, Naftale Nami Kedushat Aguf. Therefore, just like the Kedushat Amim works, so too the Kedushat Aguf works. The idea being that when you're Makdish, an animal for Kedushat Amim, when it's Ra'oi to go on the Mizbeach, that your Kedushat Amim is automatically upgraded to Kedushat Aguf. So the first stage is, you're Makdish and Aver, the Kedushat Amim, and then the Kedushat Aguf automatically follows that. Umid Akteshev the Chal Aver, Akteshev the Kula. And then once you're Makdish one Aver that is now has Kedushat Aguf, it will spread to the entirety of the animal. The assumption being here that this question is according to Rabbi Yossi, that according to Rabbi Yossi, once you're Makdish a single Aver, can that Aver then spread to the entirety of the animal? Odilma, Chad Migo Amar, Tre Migo Lo Amar. But maybe we do say that one Migo you say, two Migos you don't say. Here you have to have two Migos. One Migo is, since you made it Kedushat Amim, it turns into Kedushat Aguf. And since it's one Aver, it also spreads to the entirety of the animal. So are you able to put two Migos together to create such a situation? Now Rashi frames the question in the opposite direction. We noted this when we spoke about this in Arachin, which is Rashi over here frames the question in the following manner. May the Akdish Chad Aver the Damav. Once he's Makdish one Aver the Damav, Pashtak Dusha the Kula Beima the Damav. It spreads to the entirety of the animal for its Damim. Umigo the Nachta Lake Dushat Damim. And once the entire animal has Kedushat Amim, it also now has Kedushat Aguf. That's not what is said in our Gemara. I read in our Gemara, it went the other way around. Gemara said, if you have an Aver, that is, Lidamea, does that Aver then turn into Guf? And once it turns into Guf, does it spread to the entirety of the Guf? Now, it's very possible that Rashi had the Girsa that is found in the Shita Mekubetzet. In Otu Dalet, the Shita Mekubetzet has a Girsa that actually follows exactly what Rashi says. The Migos follow Rashi's interpretation, and that's very plausible that Rashi was looking at the Girsa of the Shita Mekubetzet and not what we have in our Gemara. But what's interesting is that in the Gemara in Arachin, the same Gemara there, Rashi interprets it just the opposite way around. And he says that in there, he explains it the way that it's written in our Gemara, which is it goes from Aver Damim to Aver Guf, and then from Aver Guf to the whole Guf, as opposed to the way he explains it over here, which is it goes from Aver Damim to the whole animal being Damim, and then from the whole animal Damim to being whole animal Guf. It doesn't seem to make a difference which Migo goes first necessarily, except for the fact that the spreading of the Kedusha from a single Aver to the entirety of the animal is really only a function of Kedushat Aguf. The source pasuk that we brought is from a case in the Torah, which is speaking about a behema that you're going to put on the Mizbeach. It's Kedushat Aguf, the Mizbeach. And so therefore that spreading of Kedusha from a single Aver to a whole animal seems to be associated with the Kedushat Aguf, and now with the Kedushat Damim. And therefore, it would make more sense to say that you need to get from the Kedushat Damim to the Kedushat Aguf first, and then the Kedushat Aguf would spread to the entire animal, more similar to the way it's written in our Gemara, and the way Rashi explains in the Gemara in Arachim, rather than what he explains over here. Though, the Griz seems to indicate that neither Migo in of itself would be sufficient. It's only with both Migos together that you could ever do this. Because if you just add the Migo of Kedushat Damim turns into Kedushat Aguf, then that would only be true by an entire behemah. We only say that when you have Kedushat Damim of a whole animal. That whole animal's Ra'oi L'Mizbeach, therefore it's not good Kedushat Damim. We force it to become Kedushat Aguf because of the fact that it's the entire animal. If you do that with an Aver, it's not going to work because an Aver is not Ra'oi L'Mizbeach. It's only a whole animal. So this idea that Kedushat Amim converts into Kedushat Aguf is only relevant by an entire animal. That's one stage. And that Migo is only relevant when the Kedushat Amim is applicable to the whole animal. So when I'm talking about Kedushat Damim on a single Eiver, I can't get there from Kedushat Damim to Kedushat Aguf. But similarly, when it comes to the spreading of the Kedushah, it's only from Kedushat Aguf that the spreading happens to the entirety of the animal. But Kedushat Damim, that's not relevant. So you have both of them independently can't create the concept of Kedushah that we want. It's only the combination of them together that creates it. And therefore the grid says that Rashi's Girsa and the Gemara in Arachin is actually Yachad. Trey Migo Yachad. And you have two Migos that each one independently can't do this, but together they can do it, then is that sufficient? I mean that neither one of them stands alone can do anything. It's only when you combine them together can they create this Kedushah. Is that successful? And that's the nature of the question over here. Now, the Gemara says, Tifshot Lemi Didei. Why don't you just answer Rava's question from his own statement? Dama Rava, Ikdish Zachar Ledamav. Person is Makdish a Zachar for its monetization, then to use to bring a Korban Olah. Kadosh Kedushat Aguf. It converts into Kedushat Aguf. So now, the Gemara's answer is very simple. It seems so straightforward that it seems to me that there's no question. It's just Hatam, Dr. Shei Lekulei. Over there, that Rav was speaking about when he's Makdish the entire animal, Kedushat Damim, then it turns into Kedushat Aguf. Our question is the case that Akta Shei Chad Eiver, it's only a case where he's Makdish one Eiver the Damim, then we want to know what happens. My, what's the din in that case? Teiko, that we don't know the answer to. So the answer is so straightforward that what was the questioner thinking when he brought the question down? That you can see in the Shita Mikubetzet, Ot Yudzayin, Kasha, Hare Mikara Bayi, Iamrin and Trey Migo, Ilon. It seems from the outset that we say over there, is it one Migo or two Migos? Umay Salkadat Chaledue Mechad Migo. What was the questioner thinking over here to bring it from a single Migo to ask the question? It's not a question. The question was about two Migos, and you bring me an answer about one Migo, it's not relevant at all. So that's also, but he just leaves it as a tzarachion, what was the questioner thinking? If you look in the Gra in Old Gimel says about this question about the two Migos, who lashon gimara, the chen havi b'harbe mekomot. And that's similar to many other places in Shas. Dim lokein ma'parech ha-gemara b'tipshot. Otherwise, then what's the Gemara's next statement that you should bring an answer to it? What the Gra points out is, Rava's statement was just a simple question. Hikdish evar ledamav, ma'u titecho leik dushat aguf. That was the only question of Rava. Then, the mi amar, the Gra says, is not Rava's statement. Mi amar is the Gemara superimposing what they think Rava's question is. And they superimpose on Rava that the question's about two migos and not one migo. The person who brought the question, brought this proof from Rava's own position, didn't know the Gemara's statement over here, which he hadn't heard. He just heard Rava, who said the question is, Damav to Guf. And he says, I can answer that question. Rava already answered that question. Damav to Guf does work. So then the Gemara goes, my is, according to us, that it's not one Migo, but it's about two Migos. What's the answer? That we leave as a Teku. So the Gemara says that there's a piece there that's not part of Rava's statement, but rather it's the Gemara interjecting or trying to explain Rava's question as being a bigger question about two Migos, and not one Migo, because if it's about one Migo, you have the answer. And that's what the questioner bought, basically. Don't we have an answer to this in Rava's position? That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is that there are Gemaras that the Shita Mikubetz brings down that did not have this Girsa at all. That whole thing about the two Migos was absent from the Gemara. And then obviously then the question brought by the questioner would make a lot of sense, because then we don't know anything about two Migos. And then the Mai at the end is only after we've established that it's clear that Rava thinks this way. What's the din? And then the question is, what's the din even by a single Migo? The nafkamina between those different Lashonot is, what's the Gemara's final Teiko about? According to the first two ways we read it, the Teiko in the end is about two Migos. By one Migo, everybody agrees it works. It's only by two Migos that we have a question. According to the last way, if you don't have that Lashon of the Gemara in there, you take it out of the Girsa, then you would have a situation in which the Teiko is about the one Migo. We have Rava's position. The question is, what's the din? After we know what Rava says, is that the din and the Gemara leaves it as a teiko? That would mean that the teiko is even applicable to one migo. Right now, Gemara says, Baminei, in all likelihood it's Abaye that's asking the question, and it's not me Rava, but rather me Rabo. It's Baminei Abaye me Rabo. Higdish Chareiver Mao Begiza. The person's Makdish, a single Eiver, what's the din with regards to shearing that Eiver? Tifsho Lecha Mahadatanya. Why don't we learn it out from the pasuk that is said by the Bechor, which is Lo Tagoz Bechor Tzonecha. You're not allowed to shear the firstborn of your tzon. Aval Ata Gozeis B'Shelcha B'Shel Acherim. But you're allowed to shear a bechor that's owned by you and a goy in joint ownership. Since you jointly own it, you can therefore shear it. It doesn't have the restrictions of a regular bechor. And the Gemara's extrapolation would be, well, your case where you are makdish, a single heir of the animal, is you b'shutafut in hektesh. Hektesh owns that limb. You own the chulin, the remainder of the animal. So you guys are in partnership. Can you shear the animal? Well, just like when you're in partnership with the goy, you can shear the animal. So domei you should be able to shear the animal. Or it says, how can you ever compare the cases? Hotam lo nachta le kedusha klal. Over there, when you're in a partnership with the Oved Kochavim, there is no kedushat bechor. Since there is no kedushat bechor, that's why you can shear the animal. Hacha nachta le kedusha. Here, when you're makdish the single aver, you are successful at creating that kedusha. If that's the case, my question is, can you shear that animal when you have that single aver that's there? Lishna achrina. Another explanation is hatam ein biyado lakdisho. In the case where it's jointly owned between him and the Oved Kochavim, he has no possibility of being makdish the other half of the animal. I mean, the other half of the animal is not under his auspices, it's under his ownership, and therefore he has no rights to it, and that's why you could shear the animal, or that's why there's no kedusha over here. Hacha biyado lakdisho. Over here, the other part of the animal that he has yet to be makdish, he could be makdish because it is his. And since he has that possibility of being makdish, that makes it that the animal is kadosh, and therefore maybe there's a question about the giza over here. Now Rashi says, with regards to the question, that why did Abai only ask about giza? We know that when it comes to kodoshim, comes to bechor, the restriction is giza and avodah. You can't shear it, and you can't do work with it. Why did Abaye not bring that issue of avodah? Rashi says over here, be'avodah loti bailach. By avodah, we don't ask the question. Da'asur. Everybody agrees there that it's asur. The kamachish law. As we saw in yesterday's daf, that when you do avodah with the mother, you impact on the ubar. And even though the mother's not kadosh, if the ubar is kadosh, then you can't do work with the mother because that kichush, that weakness, then penetrates to the ubar. And similarly over here, you would have said the same thing. You can't work this animal, even though only one aver of it is kadosh, because the working of the animal is going to weaken that one aver as well, and therefore it's a problem to do avoda with the animal. So Abaye didn't ask that question, because that was obvious. The question is with regards to giza, shearing it. Does the shearing of the animal impact on that aver? Does the shearing of that animal affect the aver? Because there's no kichush over here, there's no weakening of the animal when you do the shearing. So the question is, can you shear the remainder of the animal? Now, again here, the question seems to be somewhat strange, only because what are you speaking about? If you're speaking about the rest of the animal, why can't you shear the rest of the animal? Why shouldn't you be able to shear the rest of the animal? Because it's all chulin. And if you're speaking about that aver, why should you be able to shear it? Because it is hektesh. Abaye never really lays out the two sides to his safek here, as to why you would think that the gizak could be done to this aver, even though it's hekdesh, or why it's like a bechor, by which you would say that there's no problem at all, or why it's different when we say, oh no, this is different because you have the possibility to be makdish it, or because it's nachtalek dusha to the aver. Why should that make any difference? So that's really a question that's left over here as to what was the safek of Abaye in this instance, because it's not so clear what are the two tzadim that he is suggesting over here. By mine Abaye, again, probably mi rabo, hikdish ora mahu. If you makdish the hide of the animal, what's the din b'avoda? Are you allowed to work the animal? Tashma, let's see. Haomer mashu b'me'a shazu ola. You say whatever is in utero in this animal is an ola. Muteri b'giza, you can shear the animal. Basura b'avoda. This is exactly what we quoted from yesterday, that you could shear the animal, the mother, because she's not kedosha. But you cannot do avoda with the mother, because it weakens the fetus that is internal to her. So, Amarlei, kitani asura b'avoda midrabanan. Over there, when it says it's asura b'avoda, that's not a din d'oraita, that's only a din d'rabanan. So, I'm not asking you a question about the din d'rabanan, I'm asking you on a d'oraita level, when you have the or, when you have the hide of the animal that's been itkadesh, can you do avoda with the animal? So, Rabbah responds to him, Yehoche, afilu b'giza, nami titaser. Well, if you're telling me it's only midrabanan, then why are you only being oser avoda? Why aren't you oser giza as well? So, Amalei, Abaye says back to him, avoda demikachasha gazri barabanan. Avoda, there you see a weakness in the animal and it impacts on the ubar as well. There, the rabbanan were gozer because it looks like you're doing avoda bekodoshim and impacting the ubar. Giza lo gazri barabona. On the other hand, giza, where it doesn't look like you're doing anything to the ekdesh or to the animal that's internal, there we were not gozer. So now the question never gets resolved according to this. But the question is simply, when you have the or, when you have the hide of the animal, does working the animal have impact on the hide or not? Is it similar to an ubar, whereby the working of the mother impacts on the ubar? So to over here, the working of the animal impacts on the hide. Or do we say that it is an independent entity and there's no issue in terms of working the animal in terms of its impact on the hide itself? And as Rashi notes over here, with regards to giza, the Gemara has no question because clearly the giza would be impactful on the or, and therefore it definitely would be asur. The only question is with avoda, is it asur to engage in avoda because of its impact on this or? That's one way to read the question. If you look at the Shita Mekubetzet, Ot Chav Dalet, he brings a different girsa. Gilyon, Tzarechiyon the Rabbi Yossi. Hikdeshara, Moshi Tigadesh Kula. That the question over here, or we have to ask the question, which is, if you're Magdish, the or, the hide of the animal, does it spread to the entirety of the animal? Dilma, Davka Regel, Shiruyala Krava, maybe only by a leg, it's a limb that could go on the Mizbech, therefore it spreads to the entirety of the animal. Aval or, lo, but by hides that don't go on the Mizbech, they do not cause the Kedusha to spread. Or do we say that or already is something of significance as a part of the animal, and therefore you Magdish the or, it spreads to the entirety of the animal? And that would be the question that Abaye asked, rather than Higdish ora, rather than it being a question as Mahu Bavoda, you skip the word Avoda, but Higdish ora, Mahu. What is the din with regards to its spreading to the entirety of the animal? And then the question here would be a question even according to Rabbi Yossi, which is that even according to Rabbi Yossi, where the Kedusha spreads to the entirety of the animal, does it spread in this case? We said before that if you have a davar sheneshamat zluyabo, that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it spreads to the entirety of the animal. Over here, if you take all the hide off the animal, that's what's called galud, and it's one of the trefot that are mentioned in chulin. So that's the case, it should be a davar sheneshamat zluyabo, and the kedusha should spread to the entire animal, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So what you have to say is that Rabbi Yehuda's din of a davar sheneshamat zluyabo is only in items that are relevant to the mizbeach. That's where Neshamat Uyabo has impact to spread it. Or basically, it then becomes the question that the Shita Mekubetzet brought, which is or meaningful in the context of spreading Kedusha because it doesn't go on the Mizbeach? Or maybe it's that the Baye is only according to the one who says that a Davar Shel Seto Nevela for sure spreads, but not something that's Osevo Trefa. And therefore, it's not definitive over here that the or should cause a spreading of the Kedusha to the entire animal. Baimine Abaye Rabbi Yosef. Two more questions that Abaye asked Rabbi Yosef. He shlamim vevlada chulin. The animal is a shlamim and its fetus is a chulin. Rashi over here claims that this is a question l'divrei akol, according to everyone, which is a little hard because it's clearly following the position of Rabbi Yochanan, whereby you can separate out the ubar from the mother. And so how do you say divrei akol if it's only according to Rabbi Yochanan? So either you have to say Divrei HaKol is not about Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Poda. Divrei HaKol over here has to do with the two possible positions about when Hekdesh devolves upon the fetus, whether it's Bemei Iman or Behabiatanya Hei, and then Divrei HaKol is according to both of those positions. Irrespective of those two positions, this is the following question. Or you could say Divrei HaKol is even according to Bar Poda, because remember we just said before that Bar Poda agrees to Rabbi Yochanan's position by Tamim inside of a Tmima. And so therefore this could be Divrei HaKol, even according to Bar Poda and Rabbi Yochanan. Although, I would just make a note that it's not clear that Bar Poda agrees to Rabbi Yochanan fully. All it says is that when you have a Tamim inside of a Tmima, he agrees that that animal can be Mukdash separately from the mother or has a separate standing from the mother. He never actually says that what Rabbi Yochanan says, which is that you could actually be Mishayer, that you could leave out the animal, or that you could change the uvar. The only thing he says is that the mother's impact on the animal is fully felt when it is the same. They're both kushat guf, and maybe only in that case does he agree that it spreads to the ubar, and the ubar remains independent. May not be that you could then be makdish the ubar independently, or that you could be mishayeret. So it's not clear that Bar Poda would agree in this case, but there are those who want to say Divrei HaKol is because Bar Poda would agree in this case. So now you have a case where it is shlamim, and vlada chulin, and its ubar is chulin. Vishachata bifnim, and you shecht it in the azara, mahu. What is the din? Lamanda mar vladei kodeshim b'abiyatane in kadoshin. According to the one who says that vladot of kodeshim are only kadosh when they are born, mi avi chulin b'azara olo. Is it chulin in the azara or not? Now, the way that Rashi reads this, and the Shita Mekubetzet really is the one who says this in Rashi's position, is that there are actually two questions over here. The first question is according to Divrei HaKol. Divrei HaKol means Hishlamim v'vlada chulin. In a case where you made the mother into a shlamim, and the vlad, you were not the makdish. So over there, the vlad was left out, because it's according to Rabbi Yochanan. And so there, it doesn't matter whether you think that the Me'iman der Kedoshin, or whether you think that b'aviyatan ein kedoshin, in that case, the question applies to both positions, and that's the first question. The second question is, according to the one who says that v'adei kodoshim b'aviyatan ein kedoshin, then, in this case where you makdish the mother, and then only afterwards does she become pregnant, and the kedusha only happens b'havaya, so the kedusha doesn't happen until it's born, and over here you're shechting the mother in the azara before the ubar was born. So it is chulin. So that could be the possibility that it's like two different questions that create manifestations of where you have an ubar that is chulin. And the nature of the question is you have a mother that's kadosh, you have an ubar that is chulin, and the truth is that you have to say that it has to be formulated in the opposite way around. It has to be a vlada chulin and hishlamim. If you make the mother shlamim, automatically the ubar becomes shlamim as well, unless you leave it out. And the leaving out has to be done first. You have to say first that the chulin is, the vlad is chulin, and then only afterwards say that the mother is shlamim, so it would be lav dafka in the order that we have it here. What's the din over here? Mi havi chulin ba'azara olo. Is that a problem of being shochet chulin ba'azara? Amalei mi karinan bay. So Rabbi Yosef says back to him, does it qualify for the pasuk that's found in Devarim Yudbed pasuk chaf aleph, whereby it says, Limud, for what we learn out, Chulin Bazara, is, Kir Chach Mimcha Makom Hashem Chayshem Lekech Lesum Shmo Sham, Vizavachta Mibarcha, Mibarcha, Mitzorcha, Shantan Hashem Lecha, Kashit Zvidicha, Vachalto Bisharecha, Bekolabat Navshecha. So that is, Kir, Berichuk Makom Atazoveach. Only far away from the Mikdash can you do Shchita. You can't do Shchita of Chulin in the Mikdash. It's a Diuk, it's an Isra Say that comes out of that Posuk. Now, Kir Chach Mimcha Makom, is it possible to shech this animal outside the Azara? The answer to that question is no, because the mother is a shlamim. The mother is a shlamim. You have to shecht it in the Azara. So since you have to shecht the mother in the Azara, it's not a possibility to shecht the ubar outside the Azara. Since you can't shecht the ubar outside the Azara, it's not a problem of chulin in the Azara, because again, it's an Isra Seh. The Isra Seh comes from you should have done it outside and you did it inside. Over here, you can't do it outside. So therefore, doing it inside is not a problem of chulin ba'azara. Vayminei abayimi Rabbi Yosef. Now, Abayi asks another question from Yosef, just the opposite case. He chulin, the mother is chulin, v'vlada shlamim, and the vlad is shlamim. Here it's clearly, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that it's kedushas chala on the ubar, separate from the mother. And again, if you think Bar Poda agrees with that, then it would be Bar Poda's position as well. V'shachta b'chutz. And then you shecht it outside the azara. Mao, what's the din? Mimi chayav alei mishum shchut echutz. Are you chayav shchut echutz on the ubar, which is kadosh and is ro'oi, that means beyach? Olo, or maybe not. So amalei mikarinen bey behaviyum lashem. In vayikud yudzayin pasuk hey, man hashem yaviyu b'nei sov zivchayam hashem zolchim apnei asadeh behaviyum lashem el petach homoei lel koin. Zavchu zivchay shlamim lashem otam. Behaviyum lashem. It's only upon you have the possibility of bringing them to Hashem. Is there then a problem of shkutei chutz? Over here, you can't bring it to Eli Hashem because the mother is chulin. And therefore, the mother can't be brought into the Azara. And since the mother can't be brought into the Azara, it's not a case of Eviyum Lashem. It's not a case of Eviyum Lashem. You're not chayav shkutei chutz. Lishna achrina, another way to formulate it, which is the one we're more familiar with, is Amalei ra'oi lepetach ha'moed chayvin ala bechutz. Something that's ra'oi to be brought to petach ha'moed, you have a problem with shkutei chutz. Over here, the ubar is not ra'oi lepetach ha'moed because it's an ubar. And Ubar is not ro'oi the Mizbeach. Tosafot already in yesterday's daf suggested that Mechusar Zman is not an issue with regards to an Ubar. And it's not because it's Mechusar Zman that it's not ro'oi the Mizbeach. It's not ro'oi the Mizbeach because it's an Ubar. And until it's born, it's not going to be ro'oi the Mizbeach because an Ubar is not brought on the Mizbeach. And so given that, since it's not ro'oi the Mizbeach, when you shecht it outside, It's also not a problem of shkutei chutz. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph.